Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. And my, what a weekend it was sports.
I start with my good news is that on Friday I got my Aiden Hutchinson jersey in the mail. Anyway, I didn't catch the game. What happened?
Oh, Adam's got jokes today.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to get to with your Detroit Lions. My. And we will get to the Tigers in a little bit, too, because that series came to an unfortunate conclusion over the weekend. I was sitting there en route to Evansville watching the game the other night, and then on Saturday, sitting in our Airbnb, listening, hoping that the Tigers were going to be able to do it again. And I really thought when they got on the board first, because so far, up to that game, the team that scored first always won.
Yep.
Did not go that way Saturday. But we'll get to that in a little bit. We have pressing news to deal with your Detroit Lions. It's not great. The good news was the actual game itself, and as always, I have audio. Want some audio?
Yes.
Of course you do. You want to hear Dapper Dan make these calls.
Oh, sure.
So we start with the first Lions drive of the game. And a man who is just seemingly unstoppable right now, David Montgomery.
Deep back is Montgomery. Jared takes, turns, gives to David. There he goes with a hole to the 10. Montgomery angling to the 5, fighting his way and spinning inside the 2 to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. David Montgomery running through contact, spinning inside the 5-yard line and finding the house.
But that would not be not just a great game on the offensive side of the ball. The defense, very early on, came out to play.
Prescott out of the gun. The fullback Lipke to his right. Dallas has 3 receivers to the left of the formation. Prescott takes the snap back, looking left, throwing left. It is up for grabs and picked off. Sorry, Branch with the interception. BB's got it, and the Lions have it back. That is a big-time slam of the door by this defense.
There was also a lot of, like, play trickery. Like, this has kind of become the stock and trade for this team over these last few seasons. Ben Johnson is really just making sure he's earning every bit of the money he's getting from this team.
Jared takes, tosses to Montgomery, flips it back to Amon-Ra. He gives it to Goff, who's going to throw downfield. He's got Laporta, makes the grab. 20, 15, 10, 5,
yes,
end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. How about a little razzle-dazzle in the Lone Star State? 52 yards.
That was an exciting one. I mean, watching that the flea flicker go down, you gotta love that. And then even Jake Bates getting in on the fun here. We were starting to think Dan Campbell just hates his kickers. Yeah, not so much.
Already good today from 40. Try to extend that Lion lead. Snap, spot, kick on the way. It is up and it is good. Jake Bates sails it through from 48. And the Lions extend their lead. It is now Detroit 20 and Dallas 3.
And the defense just continued. Really, both sides just continued to roll like something crazy. Ali McNeil had a couple sacks on the day. Montgomery got another touchdown. Aiden Hutchinson had a sack, and Brian Branch obviously the pick early on, and then this.
Prescott will work out of the gun. 4:30 to go here in the third quarter. Prescott's got it. Wants to throw. Does got it complete. That is Ryan Flannoy. Ball came out, picked up by the Lions. Picked up by Terrion Arnold.
We have Branch coming in and punching that thing out, man.
Branch separated him from the football. Terrion Arnold there to pick it up. And the Lions have another takeaway, and the Cowboys come up empty.
I mean, it's hard to argue that other than Hutch, anyone is as essential to this Lions defense as Brian Branch is. He's been getting some real work done. Of course, like I said, Ali McNeil with a couple sacks on the day. Let's go ahead and skip ahead to the final score of the day to put this team ultimately up by like 38. Take it away.
First and goal from the 4. Goff out of the gun. Takes the snap. Jared back, looking, lofting right side. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Amon-Ra St. Brown turned around. That ball was on him. And he just said, these two things that work is suction cups.
Wow.
I got that football in my hands. That thing was on him in a blink.
And then we all right, so we have to talk about the obvious, the elephant in the room here.
Well, can I first interject? Can I before we get into the sad stuff? Can I also interject the fact that the Lions whooped the you know what out of the Cowboys on Jerry's birthday?
That really was great, wasn't it? And then really giving it to him on the part of the you remember the calls from last year, the pass to an offensive lineman that was not reported eligible, allegedly.
Yep.
They went and targeted him again on Sunday just to rub it in. But then I think we have to talk about this.
Yeah.
Back, looking to throw. Hutch has got him, and down he goes. Aiden Hutchinson joining the sack party here at AT&T Stadium.
But there was some bad news there. Oh, yeah. I believe it was that play that Hutch ultimately... that leg bent in a way legs ain't supposed to bend.
Yeah, Fox wasn't even going to show the footage.
And I don't blame him. Like, I saw replays of it, you know, later, and it was... That was gruesome. That's,
yeah.
That's not... That ain't how legs work, man.
No.
And they said, I believe, a broken tibia.
Broken tibia.
90-compound break. He ended up having surgery that was successful. It was both a fractured tibia and fibula.
Wow. He went for the combo platter.
He is expected to make a full recovery. Obviously, they're not saying that there's any timeline for him to return to play. It's widely feared that he may be done for at least the regular season. And I gotta say, I'm a bit worried here.
Yeah. I mean, he was leading the league in sacks. He was up for Defensive Player of the Year.
He was probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year by a significant margin. And now, that's all kind of out the window. Honestly, and I hate to come in here and be Mr., you know, Captain Pessimist here. Because I haven't been that with these teams this last year or so. Like, they've been giving me reason not to be. But I have to be honest, this kind of really has me kind of questioning, can this team win a Super Bowl, get to the Super Bowl without Hutch? Because that was the expectation. This was a Super Bowl or bust year going in. And this was a team that looked like it could do that. I don't think you can do it without Hutch, at least as the team is presently constructed.
They're definitely going to have to go back to the drawing board for their defense. But, I mean, to say that they're donezo without Hutchinson is to take away everything that the offense has done. The offense put up all those numbers. Yes, the defense kept the
defense
score
held
low.
Them to 9 points, though.
Yeah, kept the Dallas Cowboys down to 9 points. So, which, you know, gave the offense all the time they needed. But, you know, an NFL team is too big to be able to say, okay, if one person goes down, that's it. I mean, thank God it wasn't Jared Goff.
He might be the only person who is at that level of irreplaceable on this roster. And that's a concern, man. There's no two ways around it. And it's not, I mean, yes, losing Hutch in itself in a vacuum, terrible. Like a huge blow. But it's the fact you've lost all three of your starting edge rushers. Remember, you lost Marcus Davenport for the season. You lost Derek Barnes for the season. You are getting rather depleted in that department. Hutch was still able to go out there and do Hutch things, but now it's a long drop between those three guys and the next man up, such as it is.
So does that mean, do you think the Lions are going to make a move?
They have to. I don't care what Brad Holmes might say at a press conference and what he and Campbell always say about next man up and so on and so forth. You need to go get help. You absolutely have to be on the phone right now. There are a couple things that I think are real possibilities, honestly. Like, we talk about Max Crosby. This is the only team I think you could conceivably get him to agree to go to other than the Raiders. Like, he says he wants to be a Raider for life. He's been very much a very, very, very clear on that point. I want to be here. Like, he has said he wants to be part of that rebuild and wants to build that like Hutch has been here building this team. But he's a Michigan boy. A Lapeer boy at that.
Is he really?
He is. Yeah.
Well, no, look at that.
Yeah. He's from lovely Lapeer, yes.
I did not know that.
He played his college ball at Eastern.
And he's still good? Wow.
Impressive. Pretty amazing, I know. I'm as shocked as you are. He was one of the few good things that, admittedly, Eastern Michigan has really had going for it over its history.
Right.
But he has been probably the next best edge rusher in the league other than Hutch. Like, I don't know if there's too many other guys that you could go out and swap them out and not lose anything. He's the guy. And I think you could, and granted, you're going to have to probably offer the moon and the stars to get Max Crosby here. And the cost to acquire him, you're giving up, obviously, I think two first-round draft picks.
Ouch.
That, I mean, it would have to be. He's got quite the salary commitment, too. He's making $25 million this season, $23 million next year, $20 million in 2026. But when you get Hutch back next year, you would have, without question, the best edge rushing combo in the National Football League.
So
I think only Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson in Houston are the only other ones that come even remotely close.
So injury or no injury, this is probably a move that they need to have made anyway.
I mean, Brad Holmes always was all about bleep them picks while he was in while he was managing and things in L.A. Bring it here. I know there's always salary considerations that have to be brought into place. Like you could potentially be looking at not being able to re-sign other guys in that fallout.
But if they're really looking at it at a Super Bowl or bust, I mean
your window's right now.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can not do it.
So, I mean, I think the majority of Lions fans, if they were to see one, maybe two first-round picks go out the window, but we get Crosby, I mean, I think the Lions faithful, they'd understand.
I think so, too. I know I would. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, you deal with the salary cap consequences at some point down the road. We all know it's the NFL. The salary cap isn't real. Like, I'm not that concerned about it, ultimately. Guys restructure their contracts all the time.
Yep.
And if they think that they're going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl somewhere, then they'll do what they got to do to make the numbers fit. That just is what it is. I'm not overly concerned about that. I know that a lot of people are going to balk at giving up two first-round picks, but this is the level of talent you're getting. Like, this is probably the one thing that salvages this season and potentially salvages or actually improves your odds in 2025 and going forward. I would love to see it happen. Nothing would make me happier than to wake up tomorrow morning and Max Crosby's a Detroit Lion. How realistic is it? I don't know. We've watched this sort of thing happen before. We watched the Rams just cast aside any how do I put this? We watched them cast aside any illusion of wanting to hold on to draft picks or finding value in picks. Like, yeah. Here, we'll give you all the picks for Matt Stafford. We've watched them do that in the past. We've watched Brad Holmes kind of espouse that philosophy to an extent. I would not at all be surprised if they... I expect they fully that they're on the phone, at least trying to talk about this, because the Raiders, for as much as I know he wants to be there forever and be a Raider for life and so on and so forth.
That's what he says, but...
Look at that division, though, where you're currently sitting dead last. Kansas City is the powerhouse until proven otherwise. The Chargers are currently in a playoff spot. So are the Broncos. The Raiders are currently, I mean, they're only one game behind Denver and the Chargers, but it doesn't seem like they're particularly close to being able to get over the hump in the AFC West. Yeah. And I don't tend to think, like, they've already lost two interdivisional matchups against the Chargers and the Broncos, you got to at some point start thinking about the future in a real way. What? You don't have your franchise QB. You don't have really a whole lot of good prospects in the immediate future here.
What if, and this is just what if, we're playing armchair GMs here, two first-round picks and Amon-Ra St. Brown?
No, not doing it. And not, well, for one, I'm not giving up a current player. I'm not entirely convinced that that's the kind of thing that the Raiders would be interested in. It's not, their problem isn't necessarily their receiving core. You don't have a quarterback. That's your issue. Aiden O'Connell's not the guy, is never going to be the guy. Uncle Rico's just here kind of like filling space until it's decided that they're, what way they're actually going to go in that department. Like, you're, as far as the guys that they currently have at wideout, I mean, certainly you've already got Davante Adams, who is another guy that's rumored to be sold, like, mostly because Aaron Rodgers very much wants him in New York, and who can really blame him there? Like, they've already got, they don't need, I mean, not that any team doesn't need an Amon-Ra St. Brown, but it's not really something where they're really lacking in that regard. They don't have anyone to throw them the ball, so it ain't going to matter.
So I know we've got to be coming up on a break here soon, but I found an article, because somebody else was thinking about the same thing, replacements for Hutchinson. This article has five possible replacements. None of them are Crosby.
Well, there's other options here. I mean, you could go after Trey Hendrickson from the Bengals. I mean,
they've got them listed. Yep.
He's very much a guy that is a fit stylistically with this defense, and there is they kind of know him. Like, with this coaching staff going back to New Orleans, there are guys who have worked with him in the past. But the problem there is the Bengals still see themselves as contenders. They very much see themselves being a team that's ultimately going to be a playoff contender. Whether or not that's reality, as they're kind of getting lapped by the Ravens and inexplicably the Steelers, how much reality there is to that, I can't really say. But they're going to also want the moon, the stars for him, and he's not nearly as good. There's also Hassan Reddick over at the Jets, but he's 30 years old. He's holding out for a new contract. He wants big, big money. He wants 25 mil plus per season, and he wants Max Crosby money, but he's not as good as Max Crosby. He's also older. He also isn't playing. Like, would the Lions be willing to not only give up that much in assets, but then have to negotiate with him on a contract? And he's not going to be able to jump in right away. He's been out for how long now? Like, he's going to take some time to get back into, you know, prime shape here at any rate. Like, we've seen, you can't, like, when you miss significant amounts of time, you don't come back look the same. Look how that worked out for Deshaun Watson. Look how it worked out for Aaron Rodgers so far.
Yep.
I don't think, like, unless the Jets are willing to let Reddick go for nothing, you know, in compensation to them, I don't see it. Miles Garrett, that's another one that's been talked about. And he is the only other guy, him and Max Crosby, that's like 101A for me, as far as guys that could legitimately replace at Hutch and not suffer any downgrade in quality. And again, he like Crosby, signed for 3 years. Can you imagine when Hutch comes back, you've got him and Garrett opposite each other in the pass rush? You can't tell me that's, again, it's arguably at that point the best edge rushing duo in the NFL. And yep. There's only really one team in my mind that comes close on that. There's a couple, if you want to stay Cleveland, but you'd like to pay a lesser price and obviously not get quite as much talent, there's always Za'Darius Smith from the Browns. He was a Pro Bowler. He's good. He's a productive guy. You can plug him and play him in that Hutchinson spot, and he'll be fine. But he's not necessarily, he ain't what he once was. He's 32 years old. Like, he's kind of on the decline in his career, and you'd much rather, if you're going to pick one of the two, you'd much rather admittedly have Myles Garrett as far as what it would take to get him. So he got traded for the Vikings for 2 fifth-rounders in exchange for Smith, a 6th and a 7th-rounder. And you would think that was now a year and a half ago. So you'd think he'd be even cheaper than that. Just get a couple late-round picks should be able to secure him here. He's also not making a whole lot of money. He's on the hook for $1.2 mil this year, $5.4 mil next year, and there's no cap hit if you end up moving on from him. Whether the Browns are going to be willing to do it, you know, I think they would. I really do. That team's sitting in the basement of the AFC North right now. They've got one win this season, and it's for much the same reason I think Myles Garrett could be available. Deshaun Watson is done. He's trash. Honestly, Cleveland should do whatever they can to get some other sucker, Carolina, to take on that contract. Because as long as he's there, you're never really going to move forward here. Like, I don't care at this point. Just getting rid of him and starting an old Jameis Winston at QB could only be an upgrade. They're not going to do that because your owner's like, oh, well, we paid all this money. Like, the problem with that organization is not Kevin Stefanski or anyone else, though I worry that he will end up being the fall guy this offseason. The problem is the incompetent duo that owned that team, the Haslams. But we can touch on that list and see if there's anybody I missed on the other side of the break here. But we got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. Well, we've come to the conclusion of the Tigers 2024 season. And I'd like to sit here and say I'm disappointed with how it went down. I was watching every bit of the games, of this whole series, and the last few while I was on vacation. And I can't be mad about them not making it any further. I mean, in that none of this was ever supposed to happen. Like, this team was never supposed to be any good, so it's not like, why would I expect that? Yeah, why would I be mad that they made it to the ALDS and ultimately went down in five games?
We had them written off back in August. We thought this team was just going to be terrible. Let's wait till next year, and they made it that far. I mean, kudos to them.
Exactly, and we'll take a slight bit of a victory lap of sorts. We did the opening day broadcast over on WTGV. Eddie reminded me that he predicted they would make it to the wild card playoffs, and that I predicted an 84-win season, and they actually finished with 86. I think we were the closest on that front.
Nice.
So I'll go ahead and take my victory lap and allow Eddie his as well, certainly. A little bit of audio from Saturday. Well, first, the good stuff, and then the not-so-good stuff.
Fry has three strikeouts in his 11 at-bats. The 0-2, swing and a miss. Got him with a triple-digit fastball above the strike zone. The 3-1 pitch, swinging a fly ball to the gap deep in right center field. This one's way back in right center, and that one's off the base of the wall on one hop. Sweeney is going to be waved around third. The relay from Jimenez to the plate. Not in time. Head first slide gets Sweeney in. Tigers take a 1-0 lead in the fifth.
And at the time, you know, to that point in the series, the team that scored first won all the games. And Tigers obviously hit first in the fifth inning. But the problem with that would ultimately be that Cleveland's offense woke up, shall we say. We take you to the bottom of the fifth.
Fastball up and in, hit him. No. Yes, it did. I thought maybe it hit the bat. He went in with a fastball and hit Jose Ramirez with 100. And we've got a 1-1 game.
RBI hit by pitch. Not something you expect from Tarik Skubal. Not something you're going to see very often. That would ultimately be followed up with this.
Base is loaded in a 1-1 game. First pitch, swinging a high fly ball left center deep. That one's trouble. Gone! A grand slam, 5-1, Cleveland in the fifth.
The last possible thing you want to have happen in that scenario, and it happens. Even then, though, if you've been following this team for any point in time, any length of time this season, you know that, okay, we can't ever really count them out of it, right? Even down 5-1 in the fifth, I wasn't freaking out yet. And it seemed like my faith would be rewarded. Jake Rogers.
Gattis sets. Parker takes off. Swinging a line drive to right field. It's going to drop for a base hit. Parker Meadows will go all the way to third. Torkelson in to score. Jake Rogers delivers with two outs in the sixth inning to make it a 5-2 game.
Then Colt Keith in the seventh.
The 1-1, swinging the fly ball, center field. This one's deep. Thomas going back, tracking it, and he's going to look and watch it bounce. It looked like he didn't read it well. Rodney Green will be waved around third. Colt Keith will check in at second base, throw to the plate way late. Colt Keith doubles to center field. Green scores. Tigers are within two, now trailing 5-3 in the seventh.
And admittedly, I'm not going to lie to you here. I thought, all right, this is where the rally starts. This is where they come through, and then they're going to get to, like, the eighth or ninth inning. You know, Guardians are going to bring Class A in, and we're going to get a couple timely knocks off them then. Certainly seemed like that might be the case, because it had gone that way so many other times in this series. So you had that happen. You're still in the top of the sixth at this point. And you've got Colt Keith on. Unfortunately, both Perez and Torque would ultimately strike out. Go the seventh. And Cleveland inflicts more damage.
Swinging the line drive softly to the right side. That'll score a run. Keith falls down as he tries to field and throw. And everybody's safe.
Well, we're going to try it again. Top of the eighth. Parker Meadows walks. Jake Rogers lines out. Trey Sweeney flies out. Kerry Carpenter. Kerry Bonds, the unsung hero of this team, the offense certainly struck out swinging. Bottom of the eighth. Now it's starting to feel really just kind of hopeless.
The 1-2 is swinging a ground ball up the middle and into center field. The base hit. Big add-on run for the Guardians. Brian Rocchio has had a series. 7-3 Cleveland.
And this team would unfortunately not go out with a bang but a whimper. Matt Vierling strikes out. Riley Green grounds out. Colt Keith grounds out. Game over. Season over. Nice run while we had it. Can't take anything away from what this team has done. That being said, can this team run it back next season? Really more to the point here, I feel like that the answer to that question lies in the answer to a different question here. And that is, will Scott Harris actually go and spend money on this team? Will the Illiches allow him to open the checkbook, bring us like Alex Bregman or something of that sort? Maybe go out and get another MLB caliber starting pitcher. That would be nice. The bullpen thing worked out far better than it should have. Can you count on that in a seven-game series? I think not. You can't get away with just having one ace, because when that guy struggles, the whole thing is just blown to hell.
The Tigers were a great story this year. They really were. I think a lot of, outside of Detroit, there were a lot of fan bases kind of pulling for the Tigers. They were the Cinderella story.
Sure.
So winning does a couple things. It puts meat in the seats, which, you know, Chris Illich had to have noticed, at least in his pocketbook.
No doubt.
And now all of a sudden, with that winning, now it starts to look attractive to GMs and owners, possible free agents. Now it's you're starting to create a buzz. The team as is, can they do it again? I don't know, because they were really just a team that caught fire at the right time. It was exciting. But can they do it as the team as is? I don't think so. I think they're really going to have to open things up. They're going to have to open up the pocketbook. They're going to have to bring in free agents. They're going to have to really look to improve.
And I agree. Like, this was a miracle run, what you saw here from this Tiger squad. I don't expect that to happen 2 days in a row, 2 years in a row. And what I'm hoping will happen is the same thing that I had kind of hoped might happen once the Wings got to a playoff spot, that being that, all right, GM's going to open up the checkbook now. Now we can actually, now we have a core here. Now we can start supplementing that core with real pieces, major league players, things of that nature. And I don't find myself utterly convinced that this is what Scott Harris is going to do. That's kind of the issue that I find myself having, is that I don't know that necessarily that it's going to go down that way. They're saying right now, from what we've heard from Javi Baez, is that, or about Javi Baez, is that there is a plan for him to continue to be here. There's a role for him on this roster next season. And I, obviously, not really particularly happy about that. I wish they would just move on from him. It's just, I don't want to see him back here. Like, they were the two highest paid, him and Kent Maeda are the highest paid guys on this roster. And they were, honestly, this team was better off when they didn't play. Harris had said that the outlook of the shortstop position improved after getting Trey Sweeney at the deadline, while adding, there is a role on this team for Baez next year. Is there, though?
Or is he just playing lip service?
I'm hoping that's what it is. I'm hoping this is just, well, since he's currently on the roster, we can't say that, yeah, I want him gone. I can't actively go out there and say that about this guy on the off chance we can't move him. And also, it's not going to help his trade value any if we start dogging on the guy in press conferences.
Right.
I get it. I understand it. But he can't be here at the start of next season. Absolutely can't.
Well, you're not going to find anybody to trade for him. I mean, and you've cut it, I don't know if you'd cut him out straight out. I mean, you're probably going to have to buy him out, which that's gonna hurt.
That is going to hurt, but you know what? Sometimes you're going to have to take a little bit of pain to ultimately get what you want. That's just how this works, man. I'm sorry. I am not willing to suffer another season of that man being allowed to flail away at the plate and not even look like a Major League Baseball player. Can't happen. Absolutely cannot happen. And you're stuck with him. He could theoretically opt out after this season, but you know he's not going to. You're going to be on the hook for that $75 million. Because it's a player opt-out, not a team opt-out. Because you know if the team could opt out on that, they would have absolutely done that at this point, as bad as he's been. You like to think, anyway.
Yeah, hope so.
I don't expect that he's going to, but at some point, you got to start talking about moving on from him. And I'll be honest with you, I can't take it seriously if they really do decide that they are going to keep him around and attempt to force him into the lineup. Then I can't take this team seriously next year. If that's what, our big offseason acquisition is Javi's back, I can't do it. And I'm not going to waste my time. There's certainly a few targets I would like to see them go after in free agency. Like, you want to tell me you're serious? You really want to tell me that you are committed to building this thing and contending for real in the playoffs and being taken seriously? Go sign Alex Bregman. Go sign him right now. Look, I know he's not the Alex Bregman of old. Like, in the 2018, 2019 seasons, there was nobody better at the position. But even as much as he's hitting, as he's hitting a lesser level than he was, his OPS was like close to 800 over the last three seasons. And that would be, even that, a massive improvement over your Tigers third baseman over that same span, which is like closer to like 640. Yeah, I will take a guy who can hit at the level he does. Like, I would give that money all day long. Because he can still hit. He is still a better option than anyone you currently have on the roster. I don't know how realistic some of these things really are. But I wouldn't mind going and seeing. I would like to see moves made to really suggest that this team's serious about going forward. Hell, go get me Pete Alonso. I'd be fine with that. Dude's got power, and honestly, I'm not still convinced at this point that Spencer Torkelson is an everyday first baseman. I wouldn't mind seeing that happen. The Free Press has actually suggested a bunch of guys who could be targets for the Tigers in the offseason, and obviously Alonso and Bregman are among them. They also suggest Gleyber Torres from the Yankees, who's basically Colt Keith with less upside and a bigger contract. I wouldn't even bother. Like, I think they're probably set that Colt Keith is going to be their guy at second going forward. And you know what? I can live with that if you improve elsewhere in the infield, to be perfectly honest with you. Or better yet, you know, if you end up getting someone else at short and moving Sweeney over, whatever works. I'm good with any of that. Center field, Cody Bellinger. He could leave $52 million on the table and hit free agency again this offseason, but I kind of question that. He did not have the greatest season, honestly. And he's going to want a stupid amount of money. No team really wanted to give him a multi-year deal other than the Cubs anyway. That's one I would sit home on. Tyler O'Neill, left fielder for Boston, did quite well, 31 home runs. Now, granted, you're talking Comerica Park, where both, like, a good third of those would not have cleared the fences here. So, and I'm honestly fine with your outfield as it stands entirely. Now, I'm just saying, you know, if somehow Juan Soto manages to show up, I'm not going to be mad about it. Like, that's one of the few things where I would be willing to entertain the possibility of upgrading the outfield with a big name. Because for the most part, I'm not really mad about any of the production you've gotten out of guys like Green and Parker Meadows and Kerry Carpenter and all of those. Like, yeah, he's going to be a free agent. Soto's going to command, he's going to command stupid money. And money that I don't think the Tigers are going to be willing to give him. Like, he is going to get a deal that's like, just look at the deal he turned down a couple years ago. He was offered $440 million by the Nationals back in 22. And, man, he turned that down. You're not going to be able to give him a deal that's going to be less than that, obviously. And I don't see Chris Illich being willing to commit that kind of money to him. We'll see. We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, and there should be no surprise what the big topic of today is. Aiden Hutchinson, basically done for the year. Maybe we'll see him again during the playoffs. Who knows? There were encouraging updates coming from Hutchinson's family, which normally you wouldn't think that really means a whole lot. Of course, they're going to be optimistic, but remember, his dad is a doctor.
Yeah.
Like, Chris Hutchinson is a medical doctor, so, I mean, you're probably going to have a pretty good indication from them of just how severe the situation is, even if they're probably going to be inclined to give the most optimistic timeline and version of it.
Was Aiden Hutchinson's sister on camera making a statement? Because she's kind of hot. Would have liked to seen her make any kind of statement, really, quite frankly.
Thanks for that. So, we talked about guys who could potentially replace Aiden Hutchinson. Obviously, you know the two big names for me, Max Crosby, Miles Garrett. Those are the guys I really, really want. Wouldn't mind plugging in Za'Darius Smith if the draft capital required to give him up isn't overly, and I don't think it would be. Like, at most, you're giving up a couple low-level draft picks for him. Hassan Reddick, he's getting older, but he's also holding out for, like, stupid money, and you kind of wonder whether that's a guy who, personality-wise, is going to be a fit in a locker room, in a culture like the one that Dan Campbell and company have set up here. Trey Hendrickson, we talked about. I wouldn't mind it, but will we be able to get him at a decent, not even say discount, but he's going to want a lot. They're going to want a lot for him because they still see themselves as their Super Bowl window being open too, despite the fact that reality seems to be indicating that it is in fact not. But you had a few others that I didn't necessarily touch on.
Yeah, you called three of the five, but your previous ones, Crosby and the other guy that you were talking about,
Hendrickson.
No, that's on. That was a, oh no, Hendrickson's on there. Za'Darius Smith's on there.
Mm-hmm.
And who is the other?
Hassan Reddick.
Hassan Reddick. We're all on there. What's also in this? I'm not too sure on how to pronounce his name. Calais Campbell.
Oh, Calais Campbell. Yeah,
from Dolphins.
I always honestly, I kind of forget about him. If I'm to be entirely honest with you, I don't hate it. I'm not sure that it's necessarily the best fit.
38 years old. Ooh,
God, he's that old? Yeah. What? No. I get that. Certainly, he's getting up there in age, man. I'm sorry, I can't do it. Like, if the price is right, sure.
He'd come pretty cheap, I would assume.
I would hope so. But are they going to... I don't see that one going down. Who else you got?
Patriots. Dietrich Wise Jr.
Interesting name. Not sure I see that happening, to be perfectly honest with you.
He has two sacks this season so far. So far cry from who he would be replacing.
Well, yeah, Aiden Hutchinson was like he responsible for the vast majority of like the pressures and the sacks on this team. Like that's not something that's going to be easily replaceable, quote unquote. Other than like by a small handful, and by like I can count on two fingers the number of guys you could plug in there, and not really suffer a great loss in doing so. Like there's not a lot. Now, there's a couple guys on roster that you could certainly internally see, like James Houston maybe gets somewhat of that role, or Josh Pascal, who's already basically kind of replaced, has replaced Davenport in that role. Like you're gonna need him to step up more. But here's one that I could also see as a potential fit here. Von Miller, the Buffalo Bill. He's 35. Yeah, he's old. He's got three sacks in four games this season, and he is out through week 8 on four-game suspension. He had zero sacks in 12 appearances last season after returning from a torn ACL suffered on Thanksgiving versus the Lions. There is some off-the-field stuff that would probably be a disqualifier, but I'm sure that that's one that they've at least explored the possibility of as well, and he probably wouldn't come particularly expensively. This is interesting. Jamin Davis out of the Commanders. Not really, like, he's been thrown about as a target, but he's more the Sam linebacker necessarily than a defensive end per se. But you could get him cheap, and he could theoretically fill the role. Like, he's a linebacker by trade. They just kind of put him an edge rusher, and he hasn't recorded a pressure yet on only 70 total snaps for what it might be worth. Not an ideal candidate. But for me, I think there is one more I forgot, too. Cat from the Titans by the name of Harold Landry. So he's 28. He would cost $17.25 million prorated this season, a non-guaranteed 17.25 million in 25 and 26. You would have a guy who is a bit position flexible, certainly. But again, the problem you run into is the same thing ultimately with Crosby, that it's going to be a lot more difficult to acquire, re-sign other guys on the roster, admittedly. But the upside is Terrell Williams, you're now D-line coach here. Landry played 6 years for him, so he has a pretty good idea of what Landry's capable of. There shouldn't be that much of a learning curve of sorts. And it's the Titans, and they're just currently trash at the moment. So ultimately, how much are they really going to hold out for in draft capital to acquire him? That could be a potential long-term option here. And it's not quite, again, he's not Max Crosby. Nobody's Max Crosby. It's, you know, him, Hutch, Myles Garrett. Those are the guys, really. Landry's not a terrible option. Honestly, I wouldn't mind acquiring, a guy like that and a Za'Darius Smith, because you could really use the depth on either side at this point. So, I mean, there's options, no doubt about it. Whether any of those are going to be particularly palatable to Brad Holmes, that's the question, and that's one that I feel like we're all probably going to ultimately disagree on that. Like, he's going to end up doing something that none of us probably would have considered or would have thought that he would consider, because that seems to just kind of be how this guy rolls. Like, they're not quite like the smartest guy in the room thing, but Brad Holmes actually might be the smartest guy in the room. Like, there's probably something that we haven't even thought about or something that we've dismissed as an option entirely that he'll probably end up doing. But I just know something needs to be done, because I don't think, as constructed presently, if the option is to do nothing, we'll fill internally, we'll take a flyer on someone from the practice squad. I don't think that's good enough. I don't think at that point, that now takes you out of the where you currently are, which is in that rarefied air of being a Super Bowl contender with like a handful of other teams, and just takes you back down to, well, they're a playoff contender. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to make a little bit of noise, but they're not going to go all the way. I think that in itself would be enough to knock you out of that if they choose to just not replace Hutchinson from an outside with an outside player and just kind of hope for the best. I don't see that as being a realistic option here. I mean, maybe Brad Holmes sees it differently. Wouldn't be the first time, but I don't see how you can do that. I really truly don't. That's what they essentially did with Davenport coming in here, and that was one I was when he went out, I'm like, I'd like to see them make a move again. Realizing that it wasn't going to be Max Crosby necessarily. But I kind of hope they don't make the same move now that you've lost Hutch for probably the whole season. It is Happy Hour at Sal City Radio. Before we get set to get out of here this afternoon, it's about that time of the week. Things happen in the NFL that amazingly had nothing to do with the Lions or Aaron Hutchinson eventually becoming more machine than man. There are overreactions, and we, as we often do, are going to tell you what's real and what's not so much. Maestro, the music, please. All right, Adam, what do you got for me this week?
All right, is this an overreaction or is this reality? Mike McCarthy will get fired during the bye week.
I don't think he's getting fired during the bye week. I would say that is absolutely an overreaction. They're 3-3 right now, and while certainly it was embarrassing for Jerry Jones to suffer that great of a loss on his birthday... He'll fire a coach who's at 3-3. That's dumb. This is again largest home loss in a game under Jerry Jones' ownership, and things are not going well right now. But you're still in a playoff race right now. You're not even close to being out of this thing yet. Of course they're not. They'd be stupid to fire McCarthy out of a cannon yet. I mean, I think it's far too early in the season to make that call.
All right, moving on. Overreaction or reality, you tell me. Bears will make the playoffs in Caleb Williams' rookie season.
I'm not buying it right now. I'm sorry, I can't. There's no way that there's going to be four teams that make it out of the NFC North into the playoffs, and that's what's going to have to happen here in order for Chicago to make the playoffs. It's not possible. Lions are going to make the playoffs. That's going to happen. There's not really... I'm not that worried about that. The Vikings are going to make the playoffs, I would think. I wouldn't be surprised, ultimately, if the Packers make the playoffs either. The thing is, there's only been one intradivisional game so far in the NFC North, and that was Minnesota beating the Packers in Week 4. We still have to see a lot of these teams face each other before we can start saying that any team is sending four teams to the playoffs. Any division, rather, is sending four teams to the playoffs.
We're going to see it on Sunday.
Don't get me wrong. Caleb Williams has had him a few pretty nice games. But I don't see this being a thing. I'm sorry. They're going to have to play against teams in their division. They have not faced an NFC North team yet. Let's see if you can beat the Vikings, beat the Lions, beat the Packers, and then we'll start talking about, is the entire NFC North going to get in? Also, for what it's worth, you would have to have no other division send two teams in the playoffs to boot. No one in the NFC West is over 500 right now, but the Niners are for sure going to make it in. NFC South, only one team I think will make it in. But I could see the NFC East sending two. No, Bears are not making the playoffs. Not happening.
This is the best rookie QB class ever. Reality or overreaction?
Ever?
Ever.
I have to say, Caleb Williams has looked pretty good thus far. Jaden Daniels is him, without question. And they've both done some impressive things. I'm not even going to question it. Like, Daniels is throwing a completion rate of like 75% right now. He's got 1,400 passing yards, 300 rushing yards in six games, which no one else has ever done. Caleb Williams, fourth rookie in over 50 years with four or more passing touchdowns and 50-plus rushing yards in a game. Only Deshaun Watson, RG3, and Troy Aikman have ever done that. Drake May looked good against for the Patriots than I expected him. He threw for more touchdown passes on Sunday than the Pats did in their first five games combined. So maybe it really is. This really is true. Bo Nix, we don't talk about Bo Nix. We'll just leave him out of this, but this might just be the best rookie QB class you've ever seen. I'll say that's absolutely reality.
I think you changed your mind while you were talking about it. I talked yourself out of it.
I did, like, because I'm still not sure on Caleb Williams. I believe in Jaden Daniels fully. And I would not have told you this last week. I don't think I would have been able to admit to cop to this. But Drake May having him a game, and Caleb Williams seems to be able to sustain this. I don't know. I think we might be there.
All right, tell me, is this an overreaction or is this reality? Nick Sirianni is a no-win situation with Eagles fans.
Well, yeah, there is that. Like, he absolutely is, because he's... You'll remember, so Sunday, he was, yelling at the fans who were giving him the business over some of the decisions he was making. He does that a lot, and quite frankly, it's getting a little bit... It's getting pretty tiring, and especially after you beat Cleveland. Like, it just feels petty, and even more so when you're piling on, when you're playing one of the most garbage teams in the NFL. I'll be honest with you, I think Nick Sirianni might find himself out of a job by the time this season ends if he doesn't kind of get his you-know-what together. If they miss the playoffs this year, or if they suffer an early exit, I think he's gone. Like, maybe let's back off the chirping a little bit and, try and retain some semblance of professionalism, shall we?
Derrick Henry is having greatest season for any running back in his 30s. Reality, overreaction.
No, that's absolutely reality. We've never seen anything like this. 132 rushing yards and two touchdowns Sunday against Washington. He's had over 700 rushing yards and 9 TDs already through his first six games. He's on pace to finish just shy of 2,000 rushing yards this season. No 30-year-old or older running back has ever done that. He's also on pace for 26 rushing touchdowns. Only Priest Holmes has done better than that in his 03 season. No other player 30 or more has done that. I think you can absolutely argue that Derrick Henry is setting a standard which a lot of people, honestly, never thought he'd be able to attain. Like, so many people were convinced this man was done. But when he was still in his 20s, like, there's no way he's going to be able to keep this up, right? There's no possible way he can keep doing what he's doing. That's why, Tennessee ultimately, okay with letting him go. But he's just continued to basically flip a big old bird at Father Time. And he's leading the league in yards, in touchdowns, in attempts, in yards per game. He's got the longest run of anybody this season. We've never seen anything like this, but he's been a workhorse for much of his career. Other than, the 21 season with the Titans where he only played 8 games, he has done more. He's ran more attempts. He's gotten more yards, more touchdowns. Like, this is not out of character for him. And I think you could see him carrying this on. for quite some time yet. He managed to find the fountain of youth. I don't know how he did it. at a position that there are not a lot of guys who played a very high level into their 30s. Derrick Henry's just proving them all wrong. Reality. All day long.
And finally, an overreaction or reality, hometown edition.
Okay.
Jared Goff is on a greatest two-game stint for any QB in NFL history.
How can you argue against it? He was literally perfect last week. Like, statistically, we've never seen anything like that. Like, perfect game last week, and then Sunday, he was about as close to perfect as you would expect in any other week. 315 yards, 18 for 25, 3 touchdowns, and so now in these last two games, 36 of 43, 607 yards, 5 touchdowns, no picks, a hair over 14 yards per pass attempt. He has the same number of 30 of completions of 30 yards or more than he does incompletions. These are video game numbers. And you now have back-to-back games where this team has scored 40 or more points for the first time in 6 decades. This doesn't happen in the NFL. This certainly doesn't happen for the Lions. I mean, it's not an overreaction or reality. It's the stats say that it is what it is. That it is the best two-game stint for a QB ever. I don't know how long it's exactly sustainable, but it's really always fun to watch these things happen with Goff, where like he just does puts up just statistically ridiculous numbers, finishes with 100% completion percentages, and does things like this because there's so many people dating back to when he was with LA, when you had Sean McVay basically throwing him under the bus. And so many people who didn't want him here because they were so sad that, oh, Stafford's gone, we'll never be anything again, oh no. Like, so many of these people were out there that I, at this point, just for the sheer spite of it all, love watching him go out there and prove everybody wrong week to week. I said it in the first segment of today's show. There's only one man on this team that is as irreplaceable, or even close to as irreplaceable for this squad, as Aiden Hutchinson, and that's Jared Goff. Without question. Like, there's only one other guy that you can think of that this team, things grind to a halt real quick if you don't really replace him.
Yep.
And thankfully, hopefully, we're not going to have to worry about having to replace Goff this season, because if that happens, your season's out the window.
Oh, yeah.
You got one more for me before we get out of here?
I do have one more. I thought I was all set, but then I looked underneath the couch cushions, and lo and behold, I found another one.
Oh, would you just look at that?
Look at that. Is this real life, or is this just fantasy? Cowboys Super Bowl window is closed.
You think? I think that's absolutely the case at this point. I will say, that was a bad matchup. That was humiliating all the way around. Like, Dak Prescott was just about as abysmal as you could possibly guess. The last four home games for Dallas have not gone well. They are the first team in something like 40 years to give up 40 or more points at home 3 times in a 4-game span. Like, this is... Like, this team is garbage at home. They're 3-3. They're 1 game out of first place in their division. I think they could still even theoretically make the playoffs. CeeDee Lamb is signed for long term, so is Dak Prescott for whatever he's worth. But I will say, even with Jerry Jones and his seemingly unlimited money, the Super Bowl window is absolutely closed. I don't think you're going to, they'll make the playoffs. They'll continue to choke in the first round and the wild card round as they do. I have to say, and it brings me no great joy to say this, but actually it brings me all the joy because I hate the Cowboys with a fiery passion.
But they're America's team, Sean.
Yeah, about that. Yeah, they're not making the playoffs. They're making the playoffs, but they're not. Their Super Bowl window is absolutely closed. He can spend all the money he wants, Jerry Jones, but he's not going to be able to get this team a ring for as long as he's got Dak Prescott under center and even the CeeDee Lamb there. They can keep deluding themselves into thinking that they are, but no, this is not a team that is built to contend in this league. And when you can't even take advantage of, you know, playing in, on your home turf, that I think that says a lot. We gotta go. A full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Sessions. All being well, talk to you tomorrow at 3. See ya.